Time for Global News Watch, a look at the international headlines. Joining us here in the studio is Nicholas Moore. Good morning to you.
Howdy, Henry.
We're going to start in Russia. Alexei Navalny, the prominent critic of Russian President Vladimir Putin, has returned to Russia following a more than four-month recovery from poisoning. He was arrested upon landing on the charge of skipping a parole hearing.
Right, and that was entirely expected by the world and by Mr. Navalny himself, who first fell ill back last August on his trip to Siberia. The flight he was on was diverted to Berlin, and he was given medical treatment and placed in a medically induced coma until September when he was awakened. European health authorities were able to sample Navalny's blood and urine, and they tested and found traces of a Novichok nerve agent variant. The Novichok nerve agent was famously developed in Soviet-era Russia, pointing a clear finger towards who committed this. Navalny, back in December, then allegedly tricked an FSB intelligence agent into revealing the plot to poison him. He was supposedly followed for months by agents before that poison was applied to his underwear. He is still recovering from nerve damage, but he said on Instagram that it was time to return to Russia, despite these warning signs coming up that the Kremlin would arrest him.
In addition to that drama, there was more drama on the return. Once that was announced, his call to gather and greet him, there was a crowd of supporters forming at the arrival airport on Sunday, but then the flight was diverted to another airport 1 hour away at the last minute.
Right, and that left the protesters to face the increased presence of authorities there, where dozens were arrested, including Navalny's brother. Before his arrival, Navalny did make a statement denying any allegations of any crimes. Further, he referred to the European Court of Human Rights, which ruled against the Russian authorities in the years-old case that they used to threaten imprisonment. The U.S. has been among many countries, including France, Germany, Italy, and the U.K., reacting unfavorably to the news of this arrest. Both Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and the incoming security advisor for Joe Biden, Jake Sullivan, condemned the arrest as an attempt to silence opposition voices and a violation of human rights.
Let's turn to our next story. With the number of new daily coronavirus infections hovering over the 6,000 mark in Japan, looks like they're finally seeing the writing on the wall. They are preparing now, indeed, for cancellation, according to their minister, Taro Kono, in an interview.
Right. Of course, we know that the 2020 Summer Olympics were already delayed to July 23rd of this year, since it was, of course, impossible to hold them in the middle of this global pandemic. The Japanese government and the International Olympic Committee have already said that further postponement is not possible. And Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga insisted that preparations were still going full steam ahead as recently as last week. And Mr. Kono did say much the same, but he also has added that the Olympic Committee must be thinking about Plan B, Plan C, in his words. The state of emergency in the Tokyo region was expanded on Thursday after daily cases there exceeded 1,500. But also up in the air, if this Olympic Games goes forward, is how immigration procedures will work and how, or even if, spectators will be allowed into the event stadiums. Perhaps only Japanese fans will be allowed. Tokyo has set themselves a deadline of February or March to decide on that spectator issue at least.
Right. And in addition to that, there was an interview with Australia's national broadcaster where a former International Olympic Committee vice president suggested bringing up this issue with the United Nations, perhaps, since Japan and the IOC may not be completely objective in this. They have a very strong incentive to make the games go forward, right?
Right, strong incentives in many different ways. Financially, Japan has invested as much as $25 billion in public funds, and the IOC relies on their for their total budget, 73% on selling TV rights and another 18% on sponsors. It's hard to get that money if they don't actually hold the events. Besides, Japan doesn't want to be shown up by China, which is set to host the 2022 Winter Olympics only 6 months after the Summer Olympics are due to finish. This is Gavin Gosper, who was interviewed by Australia's national broadcaster. He's still an honorary IOC member. He didn't say whether he had contacted the UN yet, but he said that, quote, "We've done this before in the IOC. We've gone to the UN to give us assistance. And with 205 countries involved, he thinks it would be reasonable to have the UN assist in arbitration, as you say, as a more neutral voice. The torch relay is also set for March 25th in Japan, and that could be a final date to decide about going ahead.
Well, moving over to the U.S. now, major events that take place there ahead of Joe Biden's inauguration as U.S. president tomorrow. Many state capitals had an overwhelming security presence over the weekend to prevent any more insurrections like what happened back on January 6th.
Right. They were preparing from last Monday when the FBI warned the states of impending marches on capitals, citing a surge in online chatter. Preparations varied from state to state, though. We had the case of Michigan, whose governor was the target of a failed kidnapping plot last year. That state shut down its legislature for a week due to credible threats and boarded up the governor's office building. But the biggest threat over the weekend was avoided when a man was caught with falsified credentials trying to enter the inauguration grounds on the U.S. Capitol. He had more than 500 rounds of ammunition and at least one gun in his truck. Mostly, though, thankfully, states just had their National Guard on standby and saw no more foot traffic than normal. Perhaps it was because of news of the increased security or because President Donald Trump actually did call for nonviolence.
Yeah, so we hope everything goes peacefully. Now, once Biden is president, there's only a limited amount of things he can do through legislation because, as we know, even though Democrats control both houses, it is pretty tight in both chambers in terms of number of votes. His chief of staff, Ron Klain, did announce, though, that at least he has the presidential pen. And on the first day, he'll be signing about a dozen executive orders tackling issues from immigration to climate change to the coronavirus pandemic.
Right. And his statement, Mr. Klain said that, quote, President-elect Biden will take action not just to reverse the gravest damages of the Trump administration, but also to start moving our country forward. Throughout his campaign, Mr. Biden made promises to take care of issues as soon as he gained the power to do so, reflecting not just the difference in political philosophies between the two leaders, but also Biden's eagerness to get things accomplished that have been stalled or impossible thus far. He will immediately rejoin the Paris Climate Accord, rescind the travel ban on majority Muslim countries, and make wearing a mask mandatory on federal grounds and in interstate travel. He acknowledged, though, that he would need to pass legislation to accomplish many long-term goals. The first piece of legislation he wants is to pass a $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package with increased direct payments to Americans, followed sometime in the following 99 days by a bill granting a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants.
All right. Well, a lot on the plate, I think, to say the least, for Biden in the first few days of his presidency. Let's go to our final story. Last August, 12 Hong Kong activists were captured and arrested by authorities as they tried to escape to Taiwan. Now, a Chinese lawyer representing one of them has had his license stripped for comments online that, quote, had a negative impact on society.
Right. I want to talk about Liu Siwei and Ren Kuanyu, who are known for taking on sensitive political cases. But Chinese lawyers are all required to take an oath pledging allegiance to the ruling Chinese Communist Party. The local justice department charged Liu with professional misconduct and took away his license at a hearing on Friday. And Ren and a group of supporters were separated from him as they went inside the building. Ren is also facing a similar fate for comments that he made in court, although he still is now representing another of these political refugees. Besides those 12 arrested in August, there were more luckier people who were able to escape the jurisdiction of the national security law. Some are finally arriving in the United States seeking asylum.
Okay, well, we will keep our eyes on that situation as well. Nicholas, as always, thank you very much for the reporting. We will talk to you again on Thursday. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Henry.